Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Why did Donald Trump repeatedly make these false statements? The evidence will show that he did so to cover up crimes relating to the 2016 election. Donald Trump and others agreed in 2015 to a catch and kill scheme. That is a scheme to buy and suppress negative information to help Mr. Trump's chance of winning the election.
That's the criminal case against former President Donald Trump laid out by Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg. Today's unprecedented events continue to play out even at this very moment. The former president will speak at a rally at his Mar-a-Lago estate just hours after he pleaded not guilty to 34 criminal counts. We have a lot to talk about tonight on this historic day. My guests are Dr. Marcus Board, political science professor at Howard University, Monique Presley, attorney and political analyst, and Debbie Hines, former Baltimore City prosecutor. Lines are open if you want to get in on this conversation at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Debbie, Monique, Marcus, thank you all for coming to this conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Harold.
Debbie, help us make this make sense. 34 counts, catch and kill. It's alleged that he paid off a doorman, paid off a Playboy model, paid off a porn star to keep this information away from the voting public ahead of the 2016 election. But take us into the weeds a bit about the legality. Why is this illegal?
So what you're saying is not exactly on itself illegal. What is illegal is, in this instance, is falsifying business documents. And if Trump had only falsified business documents, although that would have been enough for a misdemeanor. But where he's at with the felonies is he falsified business documents in order to conspire to promote his candidacy for presidency by unlawful means. And so it's not the underlying thing that he did in terms of the catch and kill, in terms of paying off hush money to Stormy Daniels, although she's not identified. It's the what is stemming from that, how he basically fabricated humongous schemes to cover up what he was basically doing, repaying Michael Cohen for legal fees, which was really for the money that Michael Cohen had paid, $150,000, to Stormy Daniels. So that's the falsification. There wasn't any legal fees involved that Michael Cohen needed to be reimbursed for 9 or 11 months. It was him being reimbursed, in fact, for being the one responsible for paying back Stormy Daniels. So that's pretty much, it's not a sexy case, as we like to say, but it is a violation of New York law if it's proven by Alvin Bragg in the DA's office, and it basically boils down to falsifying records, business records. So there's going to be some issues there, which others can speak about, is to actually, if what's alleged, if everything is really a business record. Because we can put in our own personal business account anything false, and that does not rise to the level of a misdemeanor or a felony.
Some people would probably argue with you about it not being a sexy case. We've got a Playboy model and a porn star. I don't know how much sex, how much more sex can be added to this case. But, Monique, talk to us about the optics of today. President Trump, once he walked into the courthouse in downtown Manhattan, he was really kind of devoid of his Secret Service protection. He was arrested. There were discussions about him speaking to the media before and after, but he was in custody, essentially.
he was in custody, but he was not devoid of his protection. He had his Secret Service protection, as well as, obviously, a compliment from the police department for the city of New York as well. But, you know, the Secret Service did not coordinate because they turned strictly to protection services for a show like this. This belongs to the city of New York, to the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, to NYPD. I personally saw many people who were saying, oh, this is not something to be celebrated. This is a sad moment for our country. And to me, really, it just doesn't track.
Why do you say that?
Because I have watched for too many years. I'm in my 27th year as a lawyer, and I've seen too many black folks, too many brown folks without any ceremony whatsoever, without indicia of additional protection, without the courtesy of not being able to have handcuffs, where the mugshot isn't optional, be charged with all manner of misdemeanor crimes, nonviolent offenses, misdemeanors plus felony crimes, and just be ushered through the system, and are now serving time for nonviolent offenses, serving time for things that were not high treason against their country and any of the other things that this man is alleged to have done. So I believe when we see the ones that are supposed to be the mightiest, supposed to be the most powerful, supposed to be in the top percentile, the 1%, the wealthy with all the secrets, when they are brought not low, but brought to the level where the law is equal, that it is cause for celebration, that it does mean that our democracy, though on the rails, is still standing, that no one is above the law or beneath it, and it does matter that people who commit crimes are charged for the crimes that they are committed, no matter who they are.
Well, you know, I think to a certain extent, I would have to agree with you in the sense that there was all of this discussion today, as you said, about, you know, handcuffs. There was all this discussion today about mugshots, for example. And we have seen in New York City, particularly back in the, you know, the 1990s, where you had a lot of multimillionaires who were accused of criminal wrongdoing. They were in handcuffs. They had mugshots. And these were white-collar crimes. These were white-collar crimes. And so I do believe that you make a point. I would say, Dr. Board, I think on the other hand, I also understand why some people may feel sad or disappointed in today's events, not so much because it has anything to do with Donald Trump, but because it has to do with the presidency of the United States, past or present. Some people were disappointed at the impact that Watergate had on this country, although some would also say that it had a better impact on campaign finance reform. Preach. I can tell you about the history later. But anyway, your thoughts about the day, Dr. Board.
What a great day. How we doing? What a great I hope you can hear the smile on my face.
I see it in all of your teeth. Go right ahead.
Listen, I mean, the reality is Donald Trump is not the end all be all of white men doing bad things in this country. And Donald Trump he's not. And him going to trial, yeah, with his, you know, football team full of lawyers is not, you know, it's not some grand, you know, rallying cry for American democracy and the criminal court justice system, right? This is not law and order. This is one guy, one day, that took them several years, who's been foul and dirty for most of his life, doing things in politics that he's done in business for a very long time. That is the status quo. That is the standard bearer for that industry. And in this case, he happened to get caught up because he wanted to run for office and won.
Yeah.
That's it. And as happy as I am, as excited as I am, he in the pantheon of presidents, he fits. So I mean,
explain that.
Well, you brought up Watergate.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Technically, I guess mass incarceration wasn't illegal because it was the law. But we don't have to talk about critical race theory today. But you know, we could talk about Bill Clinton. We can talk about promises. You know, promises that not being kept by. You know, there are ways that this institution has been maintained, the presidency, and then just American democracy in general, that has been maintained directly against the lives, the well-being, and the literal freedom of not just black people, but enough black people, frankly. And so, you know, the idea that this one guy is, we finally got one. I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, you're not going to catch me. I told you I got a parking ticket today, and I don't care. That 45, this the 45 I do want, okay? So, like, you know, to Trump, he'll be all right, you know? And I'm happy to see him go up to trial and, you know, fingers crossed that he gets the due process that we get.
Debbie, from a prosecutorial point of view, how strong do you believe Alvin Bragg's case is?
Okay, before I answer that, Harold, I know we're supposed to answer the question directly. I want to follow up with a comment.
Sure.
I think that, and I think this is important for this audience, that I do look at Trump, in this instance, a defendant, as the former leader of the free world. And the reason why that is important is because historically, I was a history major, whatever this exact amount, 156 years ago, black people were enslaved in this country. And it is a black man in 2023 that brought this indictment charge against the former free leader of the U.S. And that's a historical precedent. And I don't want to make Trump just seem like he's just any regular person, because he's not. He was the president of this country, whether it was, you know, we won't go into the election, but he was the president of this country. And it's taken everything that he's done to this country for a black man prosecutor to bring these charges against him. And that is my cause for celebration today.
Yeah. Okay. So real quick,
how
strong do you think that case is?
So it's really hard to tell because, I know everybody's, you know, giving all their opinions all over the place. It's really hard to tell because it's a bare bones, in my opinion, a bare bones indictment. It just lays out pretty much so that he knows what he's being charged with, what he did. But we don't really know what the witnesses are, what's going to actually come in. And I do see it, when I say it's not a sexy case, it's a documents case.
Mm-hmm.
It's, nobody died. Nobody is selling drugs. It's a documents case. And it's straightly going to be very boring on a documents case. Nobody is going to be caring that it was Stormy Daniels and, you know, she was a stripper. And so in that regard, there are potentially some issues that the defense can raise, because it's questionable just a little bit as to whether or not of those 34 counts, all of the documents were actually business documents. I mean, there were things that were written on Trump's personal account. Yes, it folded through and went through his organization in terms of his CFO, but some of those checks were written on personal checking accounts. So that's an issue there. Is everything really going to be a business decision? So I think that a lot of the things that will happen along the way is his defense team will be bringing up a lot of motions to basically pick away at the technicalities of the case. That's what makes it not be a sexy case. It's a technicality to actually fit everything that is alleged into the exact essence of the law. So I think there's something there, but I still think it's too early for us to tell based on what were the statement of facts that were presented, which is something like 13 pages, and then a 34 count indictment. I mean, we really don't really know enough, I don't think, at this point to know what really D.A. Bragg really has, and I'm hoping he has something very strong.
One more thing. You talked about, Alvin Bragg being a black man and the optics of that. We still have two other black prosecutors who are also looking at this former president. Let's not forget Fannie Willis, the prosecutor down in Georgia, and Letitia James, the New York AG. So you've got a trifecta of black prosecutors looking at the former president. Point well taken. Debbie, I know we're going to lose you. Thank you so much for your participation in this conversation. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to continue the conversation about the arrest and indictment of former President Donald J. Trump. We're also going to go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tish calling from D.C., you're next. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the arrest and the arraignment of former President Donald Trump. My guests are Dr. Marcus Board, political science professor here at Howard University, and Monique Presley, attorney and political analyst. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tish, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just wanted to speak on the fact that the amount of charges, of course, they look like it's really serious when you hear that many charges being charged. But before it's all over, I've seen many cases where half the charges will be dropped or not able to be proven. Mm. The amount of charges do look serious, but at the end of the day, what they're able to prove and what's able to stick, 1 to 2 charges can be the worst. So it's a lot. But it seems like, you know, a lot of people think Trump can get off of this. This can, you know, Trump can see his way clear and not do time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A lot of people think that. So I'm just trying to figure out why do people really think Trump could walk away and most of half of his associates or people that was on his campaign are doing time. Not half, but at least 2 people.
Yeah. Tish, thank you so much. Monique, when you talk about the legality of this case, let's do a little kitchen table legal stuff here. You know, of course the problem that is being laid out by Prosecutor Bragg is that he falsified business records. If he had not done that, if he just decided to dig down in his pocket and write a check to the doorman, to the Playboy model, to the porn star, for the same reason, to keep this situation quiet so that the voters would not know about it 1 month before the 2016 election, do you believe that we would be here?
Well, yes. The one thing that we can be sure of with him is he was always going to be too cheap to pay it himself, right? which is the other piece when you read the statement of facts and you see like Trump didn't want to pay the money and then he got to pay his lawyer back like on installments. And I mean, what a hot mess for real. But it still would have been the underlying problem because even if he had paid it himself, the fact that he paid it would not be the illegality. It's what is the intention behind the payment? Is it a payment in furtherance of another crime? That's where it changes from a misdemeanor to a felony. So no, we wouldn't have had the business records misdemeanor, but we would have had a huge campaign finance violation because he's doing something that is in and of a purpose related to his campaign. Same as if he was paying for an ad for the campaign. And there is a level of transparency that would have been required for that. And knowing him, that's not the way that it would have been billed.
Well, some people would say it's not illegal to lie to the voters.
Well, it's not, right? What's illegal is to use money to do it and mm-hmm. not claim it.
Yeah.
Smoke. You know, because obviously, if you could be in jail for lying to voters, then I don't know. Would we have any election? Not sure.
Expert opinion.
Yeah. How about that? Do you believe there's a smoking gun? Do you believe that Alvin Bragg has an ace under his up his sleeve?
Say this, and I'm glad that you asked it, but I gotta tell you, as a lawyer, I'm so frustrated. And even with other lawyers who are talking about its lack of sexiness and talking about these are things we already knew. We also already knew good and well he did it. We also already knew that it was open and shut. I mean, a man has already served time for these actions and is cooperating. And the federal government always called him unindicted co-conspirator one. I mean, that's his other name. Mm. That's his moniker throughout these government walls, right? So all of these documents that they have to prove what he did, we learned today there's also audio. The tapes are present that record his conversations with Pecker from AMI, his conversations with his fixer and lawyer. So it's, the issue is not really whether there is a so-called smoking gun. It's that all the guns are lined up, and Alvin Bragg waited until he knew he had the case and could prove it, and now he's brought the case. And it may be boring. I agree with people who were saying, oh, you may not be able to and I feel so sorry for my media friends and colleagues who were saying, there's nothing surprising. Well, it's not supposed to be surprising. It's supposed to be charging somebody with conduct they've committed that the DA believes he can prove beyond reasonable doubt, and that is what that indictment is. So yeah. I think people have to kind of decide, you know, do we want people to be held to account equally for the wrong they do equally or not? Like, do we need all of these other criteria? Must he be a murderer for the charges to be important? How many misdemeanors, for instance, could he commit before it would make sense to charge him? Because there's 34 here that we're sure he did. Does it need to be 50? Does it need to be 100 because he's a former president? I'm perplexed. And these are questions I would like answered.
Dr. Board, I want you to listen to what Trump attorney Joe Tacopina said after today's arraignment when he was speaking to this huge gaggle of reporters.
Today's unsealing of this indictment shows that the rule of law died in this country. Because while everyone is not above the law, no one's below it either. And if this man's name was not Donald J. Trump, there is no scenario we'd all be here today. But please understand that based on these charges.
Your thoughts about that? No one is above the law, but not below it either. That's an ironic statement, I would say, because there are a whole, you know, lot of people, as was mentioned in the beginning of this conversation, particularly those black and brown people who have been treated as though they were indeed well below the law.
Yeah.
But beyond that, your thoughts about what he said?
Yeah, first and foremost, go off, Monique. I know that's right. I was right there with you. I laughed. I cried. It was beautiful. Everything you said, A1. As far as the statements that the lawyer was saying, lawyers make statements. Mm-hmm. They say statements in defense of their clients. They're appealing to a broader public. His decision to do that is somewhat telling. He's obviously trying to appeal to a particular public constituency who are going to have an impact on some of what happens in the courtroom. And we like to talk about the law as if it is just impartial and unbiased, and mass incarceration literally screams at us that is not the case. I think one of the most important things to remember here is that I left out George Bush and the weapons of mass destruction in my previous thing about presidents. Sorry about that. And Katrina. But anyway, yeah, him being Donald Trump, there are politics involved in him being tried and charged here. And it's not wrong to acknowledge that. I think it's important to acknowledge that so that we can say, how are these biases working against us and how might we shift them in favor of black people? So when we were here talking about Brittany Griner and we were talking about how she got out of Russian prison and we were thinking, well, you know, was this appropriate? Was this right? The question isn't, was it appropriate? Was it right? The question is, how can we get some of that favor to work for us? And in cases with people like Donald Trump, moneyed, white men, you know, on TV, doing all these things, yes, people like him are the ones who we need 34, 50, 54, 11 charges to even consider putting him on trial. And the reality is, everybody else don't even require that. Some people just need a suspicion, right? So shout out to the Central Park Five who are having their moment today.
Mm-hmm. And speaking, Monique, first of all, I would say about again, the whole sexy business, you know, Al Capone was a gangster, but he went to prison for for income tax evasion and died in prison. So I think that, you know, we can talk about those people who, yes, you know, they want, you know, they want sexy, they want salacious, but the reality is, and this is what I believe Alvin Bragg has been saying, is that this is about the law and whatever laws have been broken, whether it is a yawner, whether it's boring, but you can still, as often is the case with white collar crimes, it's going to require you to have at least a college degree to you know, navigate the machinations of something like this. But in the end, he wants to prove that laws were broken, and indeed, it may not be sexy, Monique.
No, it may not. And here's the thing: what he is laying out, and I agree to a certain extent with people who are saying, but for Donald Trump, we might not even be here. But it's not the reason that they think. Any other person, pseudo, claim they billionaire, but they probably like maybe just mid-level millionaire, I don't know.
Thousandaire.
Because it's about everything.
Thousandaires, yes.
Thousandaires. They, once they get into the 34, 35, 50 count indictment range on misdemeanors, it's not that the prosecutors would not be tracking it, would not be following leads, would not be about to charge them. It would be that someone from the DA's office would be reaching out to lawyers for whoever represents them and saying, we got you on this. We got books. We got audio. We got everything. Which way do you want to go with this? Because we can go to a grand jury and get an indictment, or we can talk ball right now. And we can enter into a plea agreement right now, and we can guarantee you that you will not see jail time, your company will get a fine, whatever, whatever, because we got other ways to spend our money. They knew, and with overtures likely, they knew that that was not possible here. So then you're left with a prosecutor with a job to do. We scream and cry about all these prosecutors with all of this discretion that use it to disproportionately charge and jail black folks. Then we get a black man and two black women who are using the same discretion to fell the mighty who have gone centuries, literal centuries, absent consequences for their actions. And I'm hearing our own folks, oh, well, this might not be the one. He may be way out there. And I'm like, you know what, y'all? Miss me. Just miss me entirely, as my children would say. You can tell I have seen. Miss me with all of that.
Let me ask you this. With the prospect of a felony conviction, and I know the possibility of that is way down the road, okay, because the next in-person appearance is at the end of this year, December 4th. That's the next appearance that is scheduled for the former president. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, Monique, if he were to be convicted, what would happen to Donald Trump?
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say what would happen, and I was like, other than me and the prop here,
doing we need you around. No, I'm speaking strictly legality.
Other than us giving a real good shout, other things that would happen. You know what? I don't know what would happen right away, because even if he is convicted, doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be any immediate sentencing. There would be a whole bunch of appeals. He would take them. We would be waiting. But here's the other thing that's in the balance. What else is in the balance is that by the time he has that next court date, I am willing to make an expert opinion rather than guess. I am willing to opine that he will be charged in at least one other criminal matter, and he will have been found liable in another civil matter.
So, meaning, I mean, don't be coy. Be specific. What do you mean?
Well, you think Georgia? Georgia, there's not going to be another 8 months before there's an indictment. Mm-hmm. I mean, the head of the grand jury came out and gave us everything she could possibly give us without sending herself to jail. So we know that there are charges that are imminent. I mean, they have already voted. We're on a timeline that has to do with what the district attorney wants to do right now, because they have finished voting. So she is waiting for reasons that have to do with her, and it is not leaking, and I commend her and her operation for that, but they are waiting on other things. And that is probably because it is a much bigger deal in terms of consequences for what is about to come down there. I mean, members of Congress involved, all of these things being involved. Yeah. And then there's a civil case, right, where he in just a few weeks from now is standing trial for sexual assault. Now, I don't know whether any part of that will be on hold, because if he wanted to testify, the judge likely would not make him do it, because he's now a criminal defendant. He has the right to remain silent, and that includes testifying in other matters where what he says may be held against him. But since he's going to stand up and give a speech tonight, which is why nobody is worried about that, I'm running on now. But the reason nobody is worried about him giving a speech tonight on the prosecution side on all of these cases is because he likes to say things that incriminate him. Yeah. Like, he doesn't have a filter. So it works for everyone for him to speak and for us to get to watch and see what he's going to say. But so it to answer your question the very long way possible, even if he is convicted, if he doesn't go to jail, he's still going to be running.
Well, and I know I've got to let you go, but I guess I need to clarify. If he is convicted, appeals and all of that notwithstanding, what penalty might he face? That's the question.
Oh, each of the crimes that are charged can be punishable. Yes, can be punishable by actual prison time, not just by fines. So the way that you saw Michael Cohen, I think his original was 2 to 10, and then I don't know what he served after that. We are in that same ballpark for each individual offense. Now, it's up to judges whether they run concurrently or apart. But yes, there's time in prison in play.
Yeah. Monique Presley, thank you so much. Always great to have your expertise, your knowledge, your passion, and your humor, all four. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. It's always a joy to be with you and your listeners.
All right. Thank you so much, Monique Presley. Thank you so much. Okay, so Dr. Board, here's the thing. I want to talk a little bit about, just the political ramifications of this. Mm-hmm. Because as I just mentioned, his first appearance is scheduled for December 4th, okay? So we are talking 8 months from today. 8 months from today. Well, this is 2023. Mm-hmm. That means that's December 4th is less than a year before the 2024 election. Mm-hmm. What kind of difficulties might he face politically as the possible, front runner? And I'm not talking about Democrats. I'm talking about, all of the Republicans out there, mm-hmm. who are trying to walk the line. And, because, short of anything happening between now and December, he will probably still be a criminal defendant. How do Republicans try to take him down?
Oh, take him down.
Yeah. How do they try to take him down politically? Florida's governor, when you're talking mm-hmm. about the former governor of Arkansas mm-hmm. throwing his hat in the ring.
Sure. Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, because the thing about the Republican Party is strategically, they are basically in the future. They are always ready. They keep things in house. They support. They stand up front. They're
lockstep.
I don't want to say a good job. They are very successful
at
the campaign that they're running. And a part of it is making sure that even if, he says your wife is ugly or he calls you a cow or any of those things, you still say, oh, we support our candidate for president. And you say it enthusiastically. As for the people who want that nomination, I think the big thing there is that they're not going to be trying to go at Trump's base. I don't see them doing that. I think what they're actually going to be doing is trying to work for Trump's base. So they're not going to actually...
What does that explain that?
Yeah. So, like, they're not going to be saying, hey, you can't support this guy because he's bad for you. He's bad for the party. Because anytime they throw a stone, it's going to come right back at them. The reality is they all traffic in some of the same tactics and strategies and behaviors and all the type of politics that, you know, cause our skin to crawl. But what they're going to do is say, hey, listen, what an unfortunate situation. It's politically motivated. They're going to walk straight down that line. And I'm the best candidate because I do X and Y and Z, and you don't have to worry about it. It's absolutely not going to be any type of direct shots, not by anybody who's actually viable. So when you see DeSantis, for example, who is scarily likely to be their candidate, I think, you're going to see a guy who is very strategic and pointed about what he's brought to the table and not paying attention to what Trump has going on. He's going to say that the politics and the hoopla is exactly why you need him in the White House to do, I don't even know what.
Is Mike Pence tainted because he was vice president under Trump?
For whom? For
Republicans.
I think he is, if you mean in terms of him maybe getting into the White House again, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, there's no chance. The idea in politics of you going back into a role is just extremely unlikely. And although typically the vice president would be somebody's push forward for the next presidential candidate, no, not a chance. I don't think it's because he's tainted, though. I think it's actually just the strategic aspect of it. The way that they appeal to their voters is by essentially saying we got all this under control, right? We're always on top of things. We're always ahead of things. And arguably, they typically are, particularly on that national stage, and that we know what's best for you. And they don't typically go backwards in that regard. Once you lose, you're out. You're out of the game, baby.
One more thing about the Republicans, and I want to talk about, you know, the Democrats as well. One of the things I find really, really interesting is that Donald Trump's base often, you know, particularly when you're talking about white evangelicals, you often hear them say, well, he was chosen by God, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. The irony of all of that is that, I cannot speak about where Donald Trump's faith is, although some people would suggest that it's kind of, but Mike Pence.
Mustard seed.
Yeah, how about that? But on the other hand, Mike Pence, no matter what his political leanings are, it is really very, very difficult to discount his faith.
True.
Because he speaks about it, he quotes chapter and verse, from our Christian folks out there. I know you say the devil quotes chapter and verse, too. I'm not going to get into that conversation. But let's just talk about the politics of it. How do they split that line between the one that they like, who they say is chosen by God, and a Mike Pence, for example, who speaks like a white evangelical preacher?
Yeah. I mean, evangelical Christians, as much as we try to make it a religious group, is actually a political group. Mm-hmm. They benefit directly and specifically from a particular political leaning that pushes their agenda forward. It gives them the tax breaks that they need. It gives them the political power that they need. It gives them the resources that they want. They have made an agreement with the Republican Party in order to be successful. That means they are not leading that charge. Now, do I think, as a person who has done organizing work, that they should be a little bit more hands on the reins in these conversations? Maybe they are, and I just can't differentiate between them and the party. I don't know. But the line that they're drawing is not about we love this person and we love that person. The line that they're drawing is we love the seat. And when we have that power seat, we have the power. That's it.
Now, let's talk about the Democrats, for example. It is expected that Joe Biden could be the Democratic standard bearer for 2024. Let's just go with that, with that argument. But how can the Democrats deal with this situation moving forward, where if you thought Donald Trump sucked all the air out of the room, particularly as it relates to media coverage in 2016, some people would say there's no such thing as bad publicity, and they could be following Donald Trump forever. just because of this legal case. Could that be problematic for the Democrats moving forward in 2024?
I think it'll be problematic because the Democrats have shown a limited strategic approach to dealing with this publicity problem. They've not shown the capacity to be able to engage in politics in ways that are connected to everyday people on a consistent basis, and particularly if you step down from the national to the state to the local level. And so the biggest challenge here is not specifically Trump, it's the Democratic Party's issue with messaging, with outreach, and with managing the power that they do have. So the easiest way to think about it, I'd say, is that the Democratic Party operates like a nonprofit. They want people who have these qualifications. They want people who have these degrees. They want people who have the training so they can say, look at all the standards that we've met. And there's a group called Insight that wrote a book called The Revolution Will Not Be Funded about the nonprofit industrial complex, and talks about how the way that we accomplish all of these degrees and prestige is by conforming to a particular standard that doesn't actually connect us to the everyday struggles of people. It separates us. It makes us distinct. It creates a hierarchy, and it creates a problem for a party that says they represent everyday people.
So it sounds to me like you're saying the Republicans are more cohesive than the Democrats.
They have been more cohesive for my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic Party has so much work to do, but there are people within the party who are doing that work. So it's not one of those things to say that, oh, the party is trash and da-da-da, right? Like, I have all kinds of issues with the party. But there are people in there trying to do some of this very good work and put people in conversation. There's also a generational difference here. So, right? So as Debbie was saying earlier, I like the idea that a black man is doing this, right? Mm-hmm. Descriptive representation doesn't really float my boat.
Yeah, I would agree. There are some young people, for example, who, while they may acknowledge that Alvin Bragg, they acknowledge the, mm-hmm. The racial optics,
yeah.
But they also don't care.
Absolutely. And they're being pragmatic about the reality of the world that we're living in. Democrats can have power of the Senate. They can have power of the House. They can have power of the White House. And we still don't have voting rights. We still have displacement and gentrification happening in our neighborhoods. We still have all sorts of problems and challenges that make it so that this dude has to be one of the most, if Trump is special for anything, he's one of the most blatant criminals we've ever seen, and it still took years.
So, and so to that point, let's bring this whole piece home with the politics. When we look at what happened today, and what we expect to happen in Georgia, what we expect to happen in New York, when we're talking about the classified documents probe and everything else. I mean, yeah, he was a human being, and one would say obviously superhuman, because if it were me, I would have collapsed under the pressure.
I would have folded.
Okay, I would have folded. It would have been. Folded. But with that said, what impact do these legal machinations have on this big election coming up in a little more than a year? Crystal ball.
I'm not happy to say this, but I'd say what it does is reinforce the political status quo. It says that, look at us, we're doing good, we're doing right. If you just trust the system and support us, then we will do better by you. I don't think that's the case, but that's what's going to happen. You're going to see record turnout. And if you're talking about prognostication and crystal ball, I'd say the Democratic Party is going to do well. I don't think that I'd have to look into the data to see how many seats are up and all that stuff. But the party will typically do well under this pressure. The Republican Party is struggling not because of these issues, though. They're struggling because Trump has created a faction within the party.
Mm-hmm.
And factionalism is a key to failure in a two-party system.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that simple.
Yeah. Great point. Dr. Marcus Board, thank you so much for your insight. Always love to have you on the program. Also, Monique Presley and Debbie Hines, we want to thank them as well for participating in this conversation. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, April 4th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.